Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And our goal with the podcast is always to help you do a few things. Number one is, if you've got some projects and initiatives going on in your organization, we want to accelerate those results for you, make things a little less stressful. We want you to help achieve more things with a little less stress and just help you on your career path and journey as well. And today, I've got a guest who's a colleague of mine through the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, Dr. Dawn Marie Turner, and she is a specialist in helping people navigate the choppy waters of organizational change. So I want to make sure I do her justice, so I'm going to read a bit of the introduction here. Dr. Turner isn't just an academic. She's the founder of The Readiness Mindset and president of Turner Change Management, where she rolls up her sleeves and works alongside frustrated CEOs and senior executives. She helps them conquer the challenges of leading mid-sized companies through multiple transitions all at the same time. Dawn Marie empowers those leaders to ditch the struggle of resistance and instead cultivate a workforce that's not just prepared for change, but actually excited about it. Thanks for being on the podcast today, Dawn Marie.
Thanks very much for having me, Greg. I'm so delighted to be here.
Awesome. So, and by the way, if you ever need to reach out to Dawn Marie and you're just interested in the services of her company, you can reach her online at thinktransition.com. So Dawn Marie, I'm just curious. I mean, like we're taught in our industry, it's important to focus, but maybe you could help us understand, what is it that caused you to decide to focus fairly specifically on helping people through change? What was the journey to that focus point for you?
It was more of an evolution than a revolution is what I say. I started my career in healthcare and transitioned within healthcare to helping individuals and communities develop and adopt healthy behaviors, create healthy communities, all of the things that would allow and enhance health, and particularly around the prevention and avoidance of cardiovascular disease, heart disease. And then I was hired for my behavioral change background by a large multinational consulting company. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered as I went into the company was that they were spending, and many of their clients were spending, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on changes that weren't sticking, on things that weren't working, and often coming out the other side with employees that were afraid of change, that were cynical, and making things worse instead of better. And I knew from my healthcare background and my work with individuals on behavior change that there was a better way to do it, a different way. So went back to school, got my PhD, thought needed some academic training to really go forward. And the rest, as they say, is history. Started my own company, developed the readiness mindset, and began working with leaders to show them that different way.
Very good. So I think, you know, there's always the 80-20 rule, which says that 20% of what we do creates probably 80% of the impact. And the flip side of that is 80% of what we're doing isn't really generating very much of the impact. And I'm wondering, when you think of change management, what's at the top of the list that you think leaders, maybe without knowing it, because I don't think anybody's trying to make change, you know, not effective or not stick, but what do you see as the main reasons why they're struggling with getting the change to stick?
So I think the main reason is their belief system. We have been, and this is what I saw, you know, 25 years ago as I started working with the organizations, there is a belief out there that we as people resist change and that leaders are spending way too much energy, way too much time, and inevitably doing the wrong things at the wrong time, in an effort to, quote unquote, manage the resistance to change.
Manage it and reduce it, I guess, right? So
manage it and then try to reduce it, right?
So that's what we teach sometimes in our change management. So I'm going to hear from you a little bit of enlightenment then. So what do you think their focus should be?
So I think there, so first of all, you have to go back and go, if you are managing resistance in your organization, then you have created the resistance that you must then manage. So you've created the problem of resistance, and now you must manage it. And you can't really manage it. That's the key. So what we want leaders to do and what we teach them with the readiness mindset is to stop managing resistance. Just let it go. It's not real. It's manufactured. It's the problem isn't that people are resistant to change. The problem is that you believe they are resistant to change, and then therefore are taking actions that can make it worse. Instead, we want you to focus on building readiness. We want you to focus on recognizing and tapping into what is the normal and natural, innate human capacity for change. And that's what we teach leaders, how to tap into it. I call it like tapping into solar energy. It's there. All you have to do is know how to channel that. And you've got a workforce that isn't afraid of change, that will move with you, that will adopt sooner, and that will cause allow you to use change for growth and prosperity.
Interesting, interesting. So it makes me, first of all, I love it. And in fact, sort of in a similar vein, we do a limited amount of coaching. I don't do a lot of coaching, but in the limited coaching that we do, I had this insight from someone, another colleague, who said that the problem with coaching is you're trying to fix mistakes or you're trying to reduce something, kind of like you said around reducing resistance. But really, even if that person's having some struggles, they have a lot of strengths. And even some of the things that they're using right now that are not creating great outcomes might actually still be strengths if they were focused in a different direction. But what I'm getting from you is that the moving away from resistance ends up kind of being in this almost this endless cycle of fighting resistance. And is one of the premises that human beings are actually fairly adaptable to change when you look at their history? So is it tapping into people's adaptability? It sounds like it's more than that, because you need the organization to kind of support that adaptability.
Yeah, it's a combination of both. The organization needs to shift its perspective. So leaders need to do things differently. So part of the reason I said at the beginning that leaders often manufacture, they create the resistance, is because what they think is intuitively needed to enable change in their organization is the wrong action. So tapping into that innate ability, in the human innate ability, is taking some counterintuitive actions.
Okay.
So for example, often leaders won't share information in the early stages of change. And they won't share it because they don't have all the answers, all the plans haven't been made, and so they don't want to raise anxiety, and they fear that they'll raise anxiety and create, quote unquote, that resistance. That behavior is done intuitively because you think it's the right thing to do, but leads to the very resistance and that rumor, innuendo, because there's an underlying energy source that's in your organization that you have ignored by not giving that information. And that taps into, again, that human innate response to change, where unwittingly you created change while trying to prevent people from feeling nervous about change.
That's interesting. I want to explore that a little bit more, because I would probably have fallen in that camp. Nowadays, I probably almost float too many ideas sometimes, maybe for the team. But I do believe, like you do, that floating ideas, and even if they're not fully baked, is probably good, because then you can harness some of the feedback from your team about that. But I do agree that earlier in my career, and maybe even sometimes today, there is a worry that when you don't have a lot of the answers, but you're kind of contemplating something, you're saying don't wait too long till it's fully baked. You might pass it through, I guess, the filter of, is this something that the organization is likely going to at least explore further with the goal of maybe implementing it? then you're saying it doesn't hurt to do that. But like you said, leaders are worried about, because they don't have all the answers and they haven't fully got a plan put together at that point, I think they're worried, I would be worried that you're going to get challenged on something and you don't have answers to it. So do you have something that you could maybe explain that a little bit? Because I'm sure that's why the leaders don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference here, Greg, between floating ideas and announcing a change. So so floating ideas and exploring ideas, that's a different kind of conversation and communication. Okay. And you want to be really clear about that, that we're not making any decisions about this, but we're exploring what our options are, and I've got some ideas, right? Yeah. I'm talking about when the leader has decided to move forward with a change and created the, you know, the made the decision that we want to do this in our organization. Then there's usually a period, which I call the pre-launch period, where leaders are working through what would it look like. They're trying to create a plan. Often they'll put a small project team together. And there's really no information going out to the wider view. It's in there that the opportunity is missed to be able to create that active involvement, and where leaders want to recognize that not talking and not sharing information is really sending and communicating out to their staff, but raising the level of uncertainty, because their employees can feel something's different. They can sense that something's going on, but because they have no information, and because of the way we're wired as human beings, we begin to fill that with speculation, rumor, innuendo. And now, even before your change initiative has been launched, officially launched, you have planted the seeds of what later many of the leaders that I work with say is and call resistance to change, right? So it's those kinds of counterintuitive things that we want leaders to think about and to do differently and to engage in different actions, even in that early period.
So thanks for clarifying that. That's helpful for me personally, and I know it's helpful for a number of our listeners and viewers. One of the, it's funny that you say that. One of the things we'll say is that often, you know, especially significant change initiatives are often, you know, the management team's been discussing it and thinking about it for quite some time. And then when it gets released, it's almost like a surprise. And management is frequently surprised that they're surprised. But in reality, there's a good reason they're surprised. They haven't been involved in all the conversation or even had time to process and think about it, had a chance to give input to it, had a chance to discuss their concerns and fears and hear some of the answers to those concerns and fears. And so after that pre-launch period in terms of the change, and again, just to avoid those surprises, I'm just wondering what advice you give to business leaders or operational leaders about sort of the next level, which is refining it and involving people in how to, you know, help propel and actually get that change launched.
Well, I think that, you know, you raise a really important point here about the surprise, right? Because what you said is true. Before you as the leader decide and are ready to announce that your organization is going to adopt something new, a new technology, merge, new business processes, whatever it is, the leaders who are making those decisions have usually spent weeks, months, sometimes years on it. And that's why the readiness approach that we show leaders is so important. Because if you're working with a resistant mindset, you're going into that change at a level of readiness that is far beyond the people that are now going to need to do the heavy lifting to allow you to realize that outcome. If you're working with what I call a resistant mindset, that is that the belief that people resist change, then you get tricked into seeing all of that quote unquote criticism, all of that negative feedback, all of those questions, all of those challenges to the very essence of that change that you now emotionally have and intellectually believe is so necessary for your organization. You get tricked into seeing all of that and interpreting it as resistance to change.
Yeah, and then you're playing whack-a-mole with it, trying to tamp down the resistance and answer the questions. And you could have preempted most of that if you just used the readiness mindset. And by the way, we're talking with Dr. Dawn Marie Turner, who's the president of Turner Change Management. And her website is thinktransition.com. And what you've really been telling us is this, or explaining to us, this idea of moving from resistance to readiness in terms of your mindset and your approach. So
that's right.
So when you know, a lot of the work that we do is probably, it might involve the senior level at first, but we're doing a lot of work with the supervisors and managers closer to the front line. So they are probably not necessarily the engineers of the change initiative, but they are involved in launching it, announcing it, again, perhaps dealing with resistance at that level. And I just wondered, what's your, you know, do you have a take on that when the leaders at a senior level, who you primarily work with, how they cascade that down through the layers of leadership, again, to achieve success?
Yeah. So again, because we're working with readiness, we get the leaders to recognize what their level of readiness is. Then the next step, and we introduce people to what I call the continuum of change, which is a way of talking about readiness that neutralizes the language. So it takes out all of the quote unquote resistance and talks about where you are in terms of your level of readiness from, I don't even see a problem here, to the new activities and behaviors are fully embedded into our organization. So that gives the leaders a language. Senior leaders recognize where their level of readiness is. Then we need to go down to the next level and say, where is their level of readiness? And we work and begin the change with the level of readiness of the people that are within that next layer. Now, it doesn't have to cascade like that. You can do it much more, and that's what we teach leaders. You can do it much more iteratively and integrated so that you can compress the time, because often leaders go, well, I can't give them another 8 months that it took us to get there. You don't need to do that. What we show leaders is how you integrate it as you bring people in and involved and bring it. So it's not a true cascading it down. But with every level, you need to work with their level of readiness and begin at that point, not yours. And that's the fundamental mistake that many leaders make, is that they begin to initiate and then try and implement a change from their level of readiness instead of the people that will do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, thank you. So you're saying, you know, don't necessarily do it cascading, because that just creates a lot of elapsed time. You want to do it iteratively and also consecutively, or simultaneously, I guess is maybe more the accurate term. I'm curious, just my own interest is that, do you teach readiness in the absence of an actual change initiative? Is it better to teach readiness while they're actually thinking of a specific change? I'm just wondering whether you can teach and get change readiness without actually referencing an actual change initiative.
I'm not sure. Well, change is all around us, right? So you can develop and use the readiness mindset for any changes, you know, whether it's a personal change in your own life or whether it's an organizational change, but it's a mindset. And so that's, you know, and we do a lot of coaching with leaders to help them shift to that mindset. With that mindset, you're always thinking about what's needed to build the readiness. Where is the readiness? And you're looking for the signs and symptoms of readiness versus the signs and symptoms of resistance.
Okay, so first of all, thanks for that. And maybe it was redundant for me to say whether you need a case study that's actually happening in the organization. You're saying, hey, there's lots of things changing at all times in organizations. So you don't have to have, I didn't know when someone approaches you, whether they're approaching you from, gosh, we've just been slogging through this change and we need to find out how to accelerate it, whether that's how they present to you, as opposed to just acknowledging that being a change leader is just something our leadership needs to do and we need to get better at that. Can you comment on that? Are you presented with, there's often a change that's not been going well and that's what's caused them to reach out to you? Or is it preventive?
Both. So we certainly get called, you know, when things aren't going well and we want to do it. But we've worked with lots of organizations, and a fundamental piece of our work is to transform an organization into what we call a change-ready organization. So in that case, for example, we worked with a large company over the just recently, and that's what we worked with them to do, to take them and allow them to become a change-ready organization, which meant that they infused the approach and the thinking throughout all of their and any changes, whether it's a little itty-bitty one, like I'm hiring a new team leader, or I'm putting in a new photocopier, or those large transformational ones. So they began to infuse it as a way of working and becoming, and that's what we call a change-ready organization. So we work with both in terms of some organizations have a specific problem and they go, we can't do this. And in this particular case, they went, we want to be a change-ready organization. So how do we get there and what do we do?
Right. So it makes me wonder, and maybe it would help the audience to hear an example. I mean, you just shared an example of an organization that you were working with. But I'm wondering if you have a success story or something where you saw a leader make a transformation and maybe the impact of it, without naming names, of course.
Yes, I actually have a really great one. This was an IT director in a large financial services company. And what was interesting about this situation is he had implemented a piece of new technology prior to working with us in the sort of traditional, typical way you would approach a technology implementation. We began to work together over about a 3 to 6 month period, and he needed to take that technology and implement it into a different department. Mm-hmm. And so we decided he wanted to use what he had learned, so we worked with him to do that. One of the things that he noticed is, one, that he didn't hear any of the negative feedback. So all of the complaints and everything that he'd heard in the first department weren't heard in the second department. The other interesting and more significant thing was that full adoption of that technology and their reliance on the IT department to use it was complete within about 2 days post-implementation, whereas it was weeks and months later they were still working with the other department to get them to adopt that technology. So that was a real contrast with same technology, same company. The only thing that had changed was their approach. And one of the things that he noticed was how amenable and excited that the second department was about change in general and specifically about this, and how quickly they began to add value to what they were doing.
Nice. That's a good success. I wondered if there's any observable differences, whether you're working with, I'm going to use the nice way of saying this, more seasoned leaders, maybe a little older and or more experienced versus younger leaders. Is there anything you've observed that's different between somebody who's been in their role for a lot longer and somebody who's newer to their role as it relates to change readiness and just even generational changes in change readiness?
No, I've worked with young leaders and senior leaders in the organization that I mentioned that worked to become a change-ready organization. There was a real mix of leaders there, both seasoned, very experienced leaders, and some relatively new. The biggest thing is that you need to be willing to explore and learn and to challenge your own assumptions. We've been embedded with the idea that people resist change. We've got a pattern of behavior. And so leaders need to be willing to examine their own behaviors, look at their own ways of working, and challenge themselves in essence to change the way they do things. And I haven't seen really new leaders or seasoned leaders be better or worse at
Okay.
it.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I wondered, I know that you do work one-on-one with executives who want to become more change ready, but it also sounds like you do that work organizationally. And I'm just curious, not knowing exactly what the services might look like, but is there a way for organizations to tell how change ready they are, or is it really just the symptoms are fairly obvious? I just wondered how you can affect the change of moving from resistance to readiness.
Yeah, so often we'll start with an organization. If an organization isn't sure, often we'll start with what we call a change capacity assessment. So that assesses five key factors that around the strengths needed to create and be a change-ready organization. So we'll work with them. This is a very interactive assessment, so it's not a survey. We use an approach that we developed called the guided conversation, and that gets at what are their strengths in those five key areas and where are their opportunities for improvement. And so we'll
Oh,
start
good.
there. That'll give them a good picture of what's needed. Then we can make some recommendations for going forward.
So without sharing all five, because we don't have time to do that, I'm just wondering, do you have one or two of the five that you think are most helpful?
I think the very first one that we look at and that gets ignored most of the time is what we call the law of change. And the law of change states that we, any of us, will not move forward until we and unless we believe that there is a need to do something differently, to move out of our comfort zone and do it. And this is a piece that often gets too little attention or totally ignored when leaders are beginning to introduce change.
Right. So what that says is there's almost an assumption that everyone will understand why we need to change. And you're saying people need to know that very clearly, that and have the case presented to them that we've decided we need to change and here's why. And here's why the existing way wouldn't necessarily achieve these results that we're looking for. Is that what you're talking
Yes,
about, the
but
law of
more than just
change?
presented the case,
Yeah.
more than just presented the case, that need needs to be internalized. There's a very different situation that occurs with us when it comes to change, again, and just generally as people. If I say to you, you need to pick something, and you say, I need to, there's a very different switch in the brain that
Yeah,
happens.
agreed.
That is the law of change. The law of change means that your employees go, we need to.
Okay.
And that's the piece that gets overlooked or undervalued and under, not enough time is spent building that when leaders are launching change.
Now, the answer might be obvious, but I just wondered what advice you'd give to somebody newer on their leadership journey. I feel like the obvious lesson is stop viewing change as a resistance problem and start viewing it as a readiness problem. But is there any other advice you'd give to a younger professional who's maybe working their way up within either a technical role or even a non-technical role who wants to move maybe from being an individual contributor to leading a group of some kind? Anything that you'd tell them? Because I think leading change is an absolute essential competency for leaders who really want to drive success, because almost everything you do as a leader is going to be changing something in hopes that it'll drive better outcomes or results. So any advice that you'd give to, or the key part of advice you'd give to a younger professional working their way up?
I think the advice that I give to a new leader, I actually have a video on this on my YouTube channel. The advice that I would give to a brand new leader, often leaders are brought in. You're hired, you're excited, people are keen to get your insights, and you want to demonstrate that you are capable of leading and enabling change. The advice I would give is slow down, take a step back, and really make an understanding of the context of the situation. I have seen and been guilty. I mean, early in my career, that was one of the very early, that's one of the things that spurred me to get more knowledge about this was the idea that, well, I have to demonstrate and trying to implement change too quickly without sufficient level of readiness within the organization and without understanding the context of what has gone on before within the organization. So that's what I would say to new leaders. That's what I do say to leaders.
That's good advice. In fact, having worked with a manufacturer of consumer products, what I found is that the younger managers who are on the fast track of development are so eager to get something changed that hopefully works well so that they can earn their next promotion. They fail to really engage their team in, Here's where I see the opportunity. What have you folks already been trying or done before that either didn't work, or, you know, what thoughts do you have? And otherwise, they just come in and try to almost force fit something that they want to see happen. And then they're frustrated because the folks are either saying we've tried that before or it won't work that way. And then there's this battle again that you're talking about overcoming. By the way, if you want to check out that video from Dr. Dawn Marie Turner, you can search her on YouTube. You can also visit her website at thinktransition.com. And again, Dr. Dawn Marie Turner is the founder of the Readiness Mindset and Turner Change Management as the president of that organization. Any last thing that you want to share with our listeners that we haven't already talked about? You've already delivered a lot of value in this interview so far.
Covered everything. I think I'd leave one piece of advice for anyone that's struggling with change is to pause, center, and think about what do I need and what is needed to ensure people are prepared for the journey we need them to take to achieve the outcomes in our organization. And that's the question I would ask leaders to ask themselves.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Dawn Marie Turner, thank you so much for being our guest on the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. People can check you out and visit you at thinktransition.com. I know you fit exactly into our mandate of accelerating operational performance. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And of course, if you're a viewer or listener of the podcast, and you're just interested in developing either the frontline leaders, middle managers, or senior leaders in an operational capacity, we'd love to have a conversation with you about how to equip those leaders for success. And you can do that by starting our conversation together at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, what I'll say is we wish you well in your leadership journey as you accelerate your operational performance.